Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Today on a special Rambling About Cars, we have more horsepower with Range Rover, more lift with Chevrolet, more money from Volkswagen, a lot more money, wow. And we have a very special guest to talk about Scout Motors and what could be coming here, some little hints, some teasers. You want to check it all out, stick with us. It's time to roll, podcast time. I am Christopher Smith, and I'm a little off because this is my first day back from a little bit of a vacation, so co-host Chris Bruce, help me out here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm always here. Why am I saying that?
I was on vacation. You're supposed to be spot on. I'm still supposed to be la 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 la.
Anyway, our guest this week is Tim Stevens. Tim wrote a fantastic piece for us, interviewing Chris Benjamin, who is the head of design at Scout Motors. And so we will be talking about that in the second half of the show. But Tim, go ahead, introduce yourself to the folks. Tell them.
Sure.
Whatever you would like to tell people about yourself.
Open mic.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Thanks, Christopher. Very glad to be here. So I am these days a freelance journalist focused mostly on automotive, but doing some tech stuff too. Before that, I ran CNET's automotive coverage. Some of you might remember from Roadshow back then for about 10 years I was at CNET, actually. Again, really focused on leading their automotive coverage there and had a lot of fun there. And before that, I was the editor-in-chief of a tech site called Engadget back in the early glory days of blogging, kind of the tech sister blog to Autoblog back in the day. So that was kind of my entry into the tech blogging world. And then, I pivoted from there to automotive and now I'm doing the freelance thing. So really lucky to be writing for size. I like Motor One, but to doing some contributions for Motor Trend, Road and Track, Car and Driver, and a bunch of other places too.
Very awesome. Cool. All very good sites. And I remember Engadget way back in the day. Am I mistaken in thinking there was a little collaboration with like the old Tech TV and like the original G4 days? Wasn't there a little bit going on there, or am I thinking of something else?
Yeah, we certainly did a lot of cross promotion of editors, that kind of thing. There wasn't any official partnership or anything like that, but certainly, I did a lot of appearances with Leo Laporte on his show and that kind of thing back in those days too. And actually, I used to freelance for G4 TV way back in the day. I used to be a writer for X-Play back in
the day. Oh, really?
Probably around 2003, 2004. So I kind of got my start in journalism doing video game reviews back in the late 90s, actually. So yeah, I used to write for X-Play a very long time ago.
So is that X-Play
and Morgan Webb, right?
Exactly. Yep. The original X-Play. So I mostly did strategy game reviews for them back in the day, plus racing games as well, of course, because I've always been a big racing game fan. But yeah, I wrote for them and Yahoo Games back in the day. And I got my start in journalism literally because I was one of the few people who owned a Sega Saturn. And there was a website called Gaming Target at the time that was looking for people to do reviews of Sega Saturn games. It was like nobody had one. Like, hey, I have one and I can put two sentences together. So that was my first freelance gig way back when I was in college in the late 90s.
Okay. Yeah. Gosh. Cool. Time's gone by,
man.
We could. I was a big fan of the reborn G4. I was sad to see it go away quickly.
Didn't last too long.
I felt like they were just, the new crew, I felt like they were just starting to kind of gel and then, but.
Yeah, people don't tend to have a lot of patience for endeavors, which is kind of crazy to me, given the amount of resources it would take to bring something like that back. There are so many great editorial brands that come out and do really cool stuff, and they just start to find their legs, and then the rope gets pulled out from under them.
It's like, nope,
or the rocket, rather.
So. You're not an instant success, so away you go. Thank God, Bruce, that hasn't happened for us yet, because we're still not a success. We've been doing this podcast for like 2 years.
Tell the people that. They don't need to know we're not a success.
Well, wait. Maybe we're a success. We're maybe a partial success. No, we're not a success.
And Tim, I tried to lowball a guy I went to high school with to get his Sega Saturn because I wanted one. I was not willing to buy one new, but it was after the Saturn had died, like by a couple of years after the Saturn had died. Mm-hmm. And I was really tried to lowball him and get one, and I was unsuccessful. I do own a Dreamcast, though. So
nice. Well,
if we're going to talk a little gaming, this older computer that's behind me that you can't really see, I somehow over my vacation managed to get Jane's World War II Fighters loaded onto it.
Wow.
So this is like, so that's like a 20-year-old flight sim.
Yeah, that's going back.
I'm more of a modern computer with, I mean, it's running Windows 8. But I was just in heaven. It's like the graphics are kind of dated, but this is like so smooth. Look at me flying it. Anyways,
well,
we're a little rambly today.
We'll just talk about video games. That's talk, but
I will talk video games all day, every day. So no problem.
Yeah. But we probably should ramble about some cars. I'm thinking
we should. Do we want to start with the Colorado? Does that sound good?
Yeah. Let's start with the Chevrolet Colorado.
All right. Then let me throw some.
If for no other reason.
Here.
If for no other reason, then okay. I mean, it's the Chevrolet Colorado ZR2. You know it, you love it. Maybe you hate it. I don't know. But there's now the Bison version that we knew was coming, and it's just a bigger, beefier ZR2. Of course, it's got all the upgrades on it from American Expedition Vehicles, the AEV stuff. So
right.
You get.
So I wanted to mention that real quick because just the other week, you and I were talking about the GMC Canyon. AEV edition, the Canyon AT4X AEV, you know.
Lots of letters and numbers.
And it's interesting that we got a teaser for that vehicle, but this kind of came out of nowhere. And I thought it was interesting that there were no real teasers for this, anything like that. It just, you know, Chevy just kind of put it out, whereas we got teasers for the GMC version. And presumably, since, you know, they're riding on the same platform and they're such similar vehicles, I would have to imagine that there's going to be a lot of similarities between the two of them.
And I love the group FBC. Thanks for joining us again. I love that you're giving me flashbacks to Iron Man, Ivan Stewart's Off-Road. Mm-hmm. What a perfect blend of video games and the topic at hand right now. I mean, could you just see this like you're in an arcade, it's 1987, 1988, and you're driving a little Chevrolet Colorado ZR2 Bison. And you didn't even know what it was back then, but here it is now.
That would have been a great marketing effort for them, actually, to like do a web version of that game where you can drive the new Bison around and race against, I don't know, like a Tacoma or something like that as well. That'd be a lot of fun.
That would be inspired marketing. I would be on board for that.
So I went to college in the early 2000s, and the laundromat at my college, or the laundromat at my college, in there, they still had Ivan Iron Man Stewart's Off-Road, and I put probably more quarters into that than I did in the washing machine.
Oh, that's how you win the game. You just keep dumping the quarters in, and then, I mean, you just keep hitting the nitros, you bounce off the wall. You don't steer, you just, like, sling the wheel once and let it spin around. So,
God, the momentum that was so on fun. You just spin that wheel and it goes around and around and around and around. Like, oh, that's such a fun
Turns
game.
Out, if you do that in real life, not a good thing. That's true. I highly recommend not doing that. Even if you have a ZR2 Bison with an extra 1.5 inches of ground clearance, you get a little bit more ground clearance. Of course, you get the Multimatic ESSB dampers.
Which is already lifted. So
yeah, that's above the ZR2. Mm-hmm. You get the upgraded front and rear jounce dampers. You get power locking front and rear differentials. There are upgraded front and rear bumpers. It's interesting when you look at the approach and departure angles, the breakover angles, the stuff that off-roaders really look into, but most other people don't. Mm-hmm. Your approach angle on the ZR2 Bison is actually a little worse because of the bumper they put on the front. Just a tad worse. The breakover and the departure angles are a little bit better. 12.2 inches of ground clearance all total. It is a little heavy. It's 5,265 pounds. We're talking a mid-sized truck. It's kind of a beefy truck.
Yeah, it's gained 300 pounds over the ZR2, which I think was the thing that stood out to me the most, especially when we're talking about no real power upgrades. That was a little bit disappointing. I think that if there was one kind of criticism about Bison ZR2, it was really on the power front. You know, there's so much everyone's throwing so much power at trucks and SUVs these days with the Raptor and Raptor R and stuff like that. That was a little bit disappointing to me, given the extra power that there, or excuse me, given the extra weight that there was no extra fiddling done on that end.
No, I'm glad you mentioned that because, yeah, it's the engine. This is the same top tier engine you can get in any top tier Colorado. It's the 310 horsepower, 430 pound feet of torque, the 2.7 liter turbo four. For something like this, I mean, I know Chevrolet isn't aiming this to be like a Ranger Raptor competitor.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, suspension wise, they're certainly billing it as something a little bit extra than your average Colorado. It feels like a little extra power to help offset the extra weight would be called for here. So I'll be interesting to see how Chevrolet buyers and off-road enthusiasts kind of take to this.
Yeah, I agree. It's always that thing. It's kind of the same thing we were talking about with the AEV edition of the Canyon. And mm-hmm. that is just that, you know, you get to, you know, you've got the ZR2 and then you have the Bison on top of that. And so, mm-hmm. and then you have, you know, lesser versions below that, you know, I feel like you start getting fewer and fewer customers as you go more and more hardcore. Like only a certain person is going to be willing to spend the extra money to buy this truck. And I should say, we don't know the price yet, but we know the standard ZR2 is $48,295. And this is definitely going to be more than that just because of the extra equipment. So,
right. I mean, this is all a 50 grand. So
it seems safe to guess. Yeah,
that's a good point, Bruce. Very specific buyer for this truck because 50 large, there are a lot of other decent full-size trucks that wouldn't be any slouch off-road. This is obviously going to be a little bit different with its upgraded suspension with its higher ride height, but it's going to command a premium.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it should be a fun toy, though. I mean, it looks really incredibly capable. It's still reasonably practical. I think it tows 5,500 pounds, so that's you know, fair, and about 1,000 pounds payload, too. So it's still, you know, a reasonably productive truck. You can definitely get some work done with it. But for sure, people are going to be buying these as toys. And yeah, I'm curious to get to drive one. I think it'll be a lot of fun. And I got to say, I do appreciate and I do enjoy these you know, more specialized trucks and SUVs that are coming out, whether it be, you know, the various flavors of Bronco that the Ford has released to basically focus on if you want to do high speed off-road, do you want to do mudding, do you want to do that kind of thing? And I kind of enjoy that that the market is expanding enough that people can kind of pick and choose and find the right product that's right for them. Although, of course, so many people in this segment really just want to buy kind of a basic truck and then go crazy in the options and do their own thing with the aftermarket packages. But still, it's a great looking truck and should be a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess go ahead, Bruce. Go ahead.
Well, no,
I'm just going to go down opinion road here and maybe we shouldn't.
I was going to say, listener Eric Nefron asked, how does it compare to a Gladiator? And Eric, I'll be totally honest with you. I do not have Gladiator specs pulled up at this very moment to be able to answer that question super, super intelligently. But I would say something like, you know, once you get to the Gladiator, Rubicon or Mojave or trims like that, they're all kind of in that same.
Oh, yeah. Price rise. It'll be right there with a specced up Gladiator. It'll be right there with the spec'd up Gladiator.
Well, I was thinking more in terms of, you know, capabilities and stuff like that too. That it's, you know, all of those trucks are kind of aiming for the same buyer. You could, you know, Tim, you mentioned the Ranger Raptor that we just saw, what, 2 weeks ago, something like that. You know, they're all kind of aiming for that same group of buyers, and it basically comes down to what do you want. You know, what do you have a brand preference? Is there something about a specific truck that gets you? Eric, I'll be totally, I feel like I'm answering your question poorly just because I don't have Gladiator specs in front of me. But there's certainly competitors.
It's an astute question. And consider where we are now versus maybe, I mean, just 3 or 4 years ago. Look at what we have for basically a mid-sized truck segment now, where we have a hopped up Chevrolet Colorado, the ZR2 Bison. We will soon have the hopped up GMC Canyon AEV. Mm-hmm. There is the Jeep Gladiator.
Ranger Raptor.
We now have the Ranger Raptor.
Trail Hunter or Tierney Pro.
The new Trail Hunter. This midsize segment, especially I'll say the more off-road focused version of it, I mean, this is fairly new territory here. I mean, if you're into that segment, it's an exciting time, but this is where I kind of veered down that opinion road a little bit. It's like, well, if we're talking about spending 50 or 55 grand for a truck, am I thinking mid-size? And I don't know. My answer on that is probably no, to be honest.
Yeah, that's definitely a great point. I mean, you're well within a nicely equipped F-150 if you want to, or you know, Silverado or whatever you want to at that point. But really, I guess it depends on what you want, what you want to do. Yep. A bigger truck is not going to be better on the trails, of course. And so if you want to go dune hopping, then that's a different thing. But if you're, you know, where I am, you know, the trails are mostly wooded and narrow and that kind of thing. So, mm-hmm. you know, something like this would probably be even better suited, but it really depends what you want to do. And I do like that, you know, it wasn't that long ago that even finding a decent midsize truck was a challenge. And now we've got real specialty models like this that are available, which I think points to strength in the market, which is good. And certainly people are spending more and more on trucks. I forget what the average price of a truck is these days, but it's up there.
It's up there.
I think that's definitely good that people have
options. The average car is 45, 46, I think, the last time I saw an average vehicle in general. So.
Well, I just saw a report today. I can't remember where it came from. I think 1 in 6 new car buyers right now are paying $1,000 a month for the car payment.
Yeah.
One in six. $1,000 a month. I'm going to feed into that a little bit, I think, with our next topic.
You think the buyers of this vehicle are going to be paying $1,000 a month?
Honestly, I hope not. If you have to pay $1,000 for your midsize truck, you need, I mean, make better financial decisions. That's my unsolicited advice.
But our next vehicle here is the Land Rover Range Rover Sport SV. And so this is the new top of the heat version of the Range Rover Sport. It gets that BMW source twin turbo 4.4 liter V8 that they've been using in a lot of vehicles. In this application, it makes 626 horsepower, 590 pound feet of torque. And I forgot to mention this, it is mild hybrid equipped.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not for efficiency, I don't think.
No.
It's all about performance, and damn it all, every time I get my list of like the top 20 fastest SUVs, here comes another one. Now I got to go back and update my list again. but believe it or not, let me talk about that list for a second. This Range Rover Sport SV, Range Rover says 0 to 60, Land Rover says 0 to 60, 3.6 seconds, top speed of 180 miles an hour. That's seriously fast for anything, never mind an SUV.
Yes.
And it's still on the very bottom end of the top 20 fastest SUVs, new SUVs in the world right now. I think the cutoff is like 3.7 or 3.8. And I had like a four-way tie at that point. So as insane as this is, there are still, I mean, it's still at the bottom of that top 20. But I mean, come on.
And it's not a light vehicle, 5,644 pounds. So it's hauling some weight to get to that 0 to 60 in 3.6 seconds.
Yep.
But you can get 23-inch carbon fiber wheels that save you 78 pounds. So, you know, that's really going to help on your 5,000-pound behemoth of an SUV to get 78 pounds off your carbon fiber wheels, which will be thousands of dollars. And you can get carbon ceramic brakes, which will save another 70-something pounds, too. So, you know, very important that you save a little bit of weight down low to the ground, and you've got this giant SUV body all over it.
And I'm glad you mentioned all of that.
Sorry to interrupt you.
That's just fine.
We love it.
I need interrupting sometimes. there's a carbon fiber hood also that you can get. Altogether, it can save 168 pounds. But consider this. If I'm describing a vehicle like this, okay, 626 horsepower, twin turbo, 4.4 liter V8 from BMW. 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds. It's got optional carbon fiber wheels, carbon ceramic brakes, carbon fiber hood. We'll talk about the vibrating seats later, and I'm not kidding on that. Does it sound like I'm talking about a 5,200 pound SUV? Carbon ceramic brakes, carbon fiber wheels. But yeah, I mean, what a weird time to be in.
So real quick, I always love to shout out whenever we have someone who I've seen comment for the first time. So we have a first time commenter, Brian Grant. Subaru should bring back the Baja. I have no idea what that has to do with either the Colorado or the Range Rover, but by God, do I agree with you, Brian.
Brian might be a first time commenter. Actually, he's not a first time commenter. He's carried over. He's somebody that I know. If it's the same Brian Grant, it's somebody that I know. Very, very astute on cars. Loves rambling about cars. So thank you, Brian, for chiming in. Has an owner of a Forester. I would agree. Let's bring back the Baja. But let's, for crying out loud, let's not give it an $80,000 price tag with 600 horsepower and vibrating seats and a, wait for it, 29 speaker, 1,430 watt stereo system. And I should mention that I just pulled the $80,000 price out of my backside because Range Rover, there isn't a price listed for the Sport SV. And for right now, it's only available by invitation. The first, what they're calling the Edition 1, it's only going to be available by invitation. If they say, hey, you're a preferred customer, would you like to buy one of these? You'll have the opportunity. Beyond that, we have no information on pricing. I can just about guarantee it's going to be way more than 80 grand.
Yeah, I'd say you probably need to bet double that. I think that's probably closer to the market, especially given there'll probably be some dealer premiums going on here. But the last SV was remarkable. I had a chance to drive that thing, and it was really, really good, both on-road and off-road. So I fully expect that this one will be amazing. And the images that they dropped, it looks really, really phenomenal. It looks amazingly cool, kind of subtle. I do like the kind of the greenish yellowish highlights that they've got on the calipers and things like that, but there's nothing really that's loud and brash about it, which I think is what I like the most. This is a really fast, really expensive, really high performance SUV that is, I don't want to say a sleeper exactly, but it is a pretty subtle looking machine. I think it looks fantastic.
No, I think
it's hard to be a sleeper when it's, you know,
Not necessarily
of a house in some areas.
But hey, you don't the guy in the next lane doesn't know that. And to your point there, I would call this a sleeper. If somebody that knows what it is, they can pick out, oh, that's got the carbon fiber wheels. Okay, I know what that is. Or they might see the brakes. Okay, if you can find those details. Mm-hmm. But only an enthusiast, and even then, a Land Rover person will be the one that really picks that out. To everybody else, it'll look like a fancy Range Rover, and they're probably quick, but they're not as quick as my Corvette, or they're not as quick as my Mustang. And yeah, you'll get surprised. It'll surprise a few people.
So Grupa FBC has the best comment of the night so far. Like ice cream, the SV is somewhat dumb and not good for me, but I want one.
Yep, very true. Very, very true. That's
the best comment of the night so far. We still have more cars to talk about.
I mean, as I was just going over some of these stats, you know, because really we're talking about specialty vehicles here tonight. The Colorado ZR2 Bison, that's definitely a specialty vehicle that's appealing to a very small segment. Range Rover Sport SV, whether you want one or not, it's only offered to a very specific segment by invitation only. So the vehicle we're going to talk about here later, there's only 333 being made of them. We'll get to that in a second, but yeah, we're talking about very, very specialized vehicles. And I'm wondering how many more specialized vehicles the world really needs. I guess as people start, if people are buying them,
people will buy them.
You know, if I had that kind of money to spend, I shouldn't say that because I would make really stupid decisions with that money. I probably wouldn't have one of these Range Rover Sports. I probably have like 80 Mustang 2s and then another 40 for parts. So I'm probably not the best one to judge on that.
I'm always amazed that manufacturers can get away with having as many special cars as they do and them still being treated as special. I mean, every manufacturer is doing it at this point, and you know, you have to respect that brands can get away with it. And of course, we all know why they do it. They can add on a list of desirable options that add some amount of cost for them, but that they can, you know, make a huge amount of profit margin on top of that. So that's why they do it, of course. But it remains to be seen, you know, how far can these brands kind of milking is maybe the wrong term, but maybe it's not the wrong term. You know, how far can they go? We've seen Lotus maybe pushing the envelope a little bit too far in previous generations. Hopefully they'll do a little bit better with new products and not just new sticker packages going forward. I think we, you know, we've all heard of the sticker package, special editions, that kind of thing. This to me feels like a really significant upgrade. So I think that this is fair for sure. But there are certainly a lot of quote unquote special editions out there that are far from special.
Agreed.
Very, very good points all around. I don't got nothing else to add on that. We need to have you. You should be co-hosting the show, Tim.
I'd like to take another couple weeks off. Smith, are you firing me?
Wow, that's harsh. Sorry that you had to find out this way.
No. If anybody's getting fired, it's me.
Well, let's talk about another vehicle.
The other special edition.
Special edition. So far, this one is only for Europe, and it has an absolutely absurd price that we will get to in a moment. This is the Volkswagen Golf R 333 Limited Edition. The 333 it references two things. First off, it has 333 metric horsepower, or Pferdstärke, as they say in Germany, and that translates to 328 horsepower for us American folks, and they are only making 333 of them.
There's one more reference in there to 333.
Please?
It officially debuted, according to our boss, Adrian, it officially debuted in Germany at 3:33 p.m. today.
Hmm.
There you go.
For... Just to make it complete, make it the trifecta. 333. You think they would charge $333 for it? No.
No. No, they won't.
No. How about 76,410 euros? Yeah. Which for in US currency would equal $81,600 in current exchange rates.
That is a lot of money for a Golf, man.
That's a Volkswagen Golf. Now, I hate to become that old guy that says get off the lawn, but we've had a $50,000 successor to the Chevrolet S10, and like it or not, the Colorado it kind of picked up where the S10 left off, right? Am I wrong?
Yes,
there?
That's so fair.
We have a $50,000 S10 successor. Okay, we have the Range Rover Sport SV, which, I mean, that's properly super and just incredible performance, high-end luxury. We don't know what it's going to cost. It'll be a lot. But it's at least in sort of its own proper category. And now we have a Volkswagen Golf that's over $80,000 in U.S. currency. What is happening to the world? What is happening? Hey, limited edition, 333. Power, I mean, it's pretty much the same power as you get in regular in the other special editions that they've done, right? So am I losing my mind here, or am I just getting to be that age where it's just like what's
why
wrong?
Not Smith? Why
what's
not-
wrong? What's wrong with the world?
Certainly $80,000 equivalent, because we should say this has not been confirmed for the United States so far. This is a European only model. To me, if I'm looking into my crystal ball, I have to wonder if you do something like this for Europe, would you do something similar for the United States? You know, maybe we don't know yet though, but it's.
Well, I mean, we should probably review what you're getting aside from, okay, it's a limited edition model. They're only making 333, 480 watt stereo, 19 inch wheels. The speed limiter on this is bumped up, so it'll top out at 168 miles an hour, 0 to 100 kilometers an hour, 62 miles an hour, 4.6 seconds. The delivery starts in October of this year. And yeah, right now, as far as we know, it's just European only. Of course, right. it's wearing that lime yellow exterior, which
it's like a highlighter yellow.
Usually, I'm just totally put off by these shades, but this one works for me, and I don't know why. Maybe it's because it's a Golf, and I am a Golf fan.
Same
that shade with the black striping with the black accents. I think it's just cool as hell.
And you didn't mention this. It gets an Akrapovic exhaust with titanium rear silencers, which, first off, Akrapovic exhausts always sound fantastic. And the fact that my exhaust is titanium sounds cool as hell.
And I mean, and Uki comments, glad they didn't make it 666. I don't know. I think maybe this would have been a better fit at 666. But obviously, for reasons well known, they wouldn't make it that. But this thing just seems kind of like just like it has this evil streak, or it wants to, you know, beat up your neighbor for you.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me. This isn't the end of the Golf R, right? This is still continuing on to this kind of feels like an end of the road kind of special edition to me, because, like I said, there's not really that much honestly special about it, except for the number on the dashboard, basically X of 333. So, you know, I'm certainly not opposed to something like this, but it really feels like, you know, a final send off kind of special edition, get the, you know, the last one of these, but I haven't heard that the R is going away. So the timing of it seems a bit strange. It is a bummer that I don't think we're going to get this in the US. I'd be surprised if we do. We might get our own flavor.
Am I mistaken that we've heard the next gen Golf is electric?
If I remember correctly, I think that is the case. Don't 100% quote me on that. And you're right, Tim, this does feel like a final edition, but I'm with you. We haven't heard anything that, okay, this is it. This is going to be the last. Just from what we gather right now, just another limited edition.
Yeah.
So sort of in the vein of the 20 years edition, right?
Right. But the Golf R is really great. I've actually had a chance to spend quite a bit of time in them. It was interesting. I had one for a week and I really actually didn't like it. I just didn't connect with it for whatever reason. And then I had it for a second week. I got a second loan to do a review of it for another outlet. And I took it out on a really rainy day, and it just completely transformed my impression of the car, because it was so tail happy and so happy to swing the rear end down, much more so than your average all-wheel drive car. I'm a Subaru guy myself, and, you know, so constantly fighting understeer usually. So how playful it was really kind of changed my mind on that car. So I could see, you know, there being the interest. Certainly, you know, there's a lot of passionate love for Volkswagens out there. So I can see there being desirability of this. And speaking of Subarus, I went back and looked at the S209, because I remember when that version of the STI came out a couple of years ago, that was priced in the mid 60s. And everybody at that time said that's an outrageous amount of money for a Subaru. Who would spend $65,000 on a Subaru? I went to look at prices for those now, and they're going for the mid $90,000 used. So I think if anything, if nothing else, this is Volkswagen being well aware of, you know, knowledge that these are going to be very desirable, and so they might as well get their cut. And of course, since these are being sold in Europe, they're being sold directly by Volkswagen, so they don't have to worry about upcharges and that kind of thing, which is a sad state of the world here in the U.S.
Well, I mean, there's certainly no mistaking that a car as iconic as the Golf here, that's going to have a passionate following. You're definitely playing on heartstrings here. I mean, consider like the original Type 2 buses, just how inexpensive and utilitarian they were, but they struck a chord, and, you know, the really nice 23 window buses are easily six figures. Of course, I mean, we're not talking a 60-year-old Golf here, but in 60 years, you have one of these limited editions.
Yeah. No. So two things I wanted to point out real quick. First off, I posted this. You guys can see it. So Volkswagen Golf Electric is going to be, we're going to see it soon as a concept, hasn't debuted yet, but apparently it's coming. And then Tim, as what you were saying, my little anecdote about that, I forget where the S209 debuted, but I was at whatever auto show that was, and I got one of the hats and gave it to my dad. So the joke that I told him at the time is they probably made more of these hats than they did of the actual car.
That's an astute point. And let me just mention also some points here from Jay Ferrari. ADK opens up a lot of doors for options. Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any argument of saying, okay, well, I have $80,000 to spend. Do I want to buy, I mean, I think you can step into a nice Cayman for about 80 grand or a little bit less. Do I want to buy a Cayman, or do I want to buy a Golf? but that's not really the point here. This is going to be focused at a very specific, passionate VW enthusiast who wants a limited edition vehicle. You know, to Tim's point, kind of just playing on that a little bit. Mm-hmm. But there's no denying it's a lot of money. Do we remember what the 20 years edition went for? Wasn't it somewhere around like 50,000 euros or so, or 50 or 55?
Good question.
Somewhere around there.
It was 55, but let me look.
So, I mean, they're definitely, I keep coming back to the price. It's definitely a pricey
the
little
20
Golf.
Years edition in Europe was 59,995 euros.
So I don't think I have any, I don't think I have anything else to see on that. This is not going to make me sound like more of an old man than I already am. Okay. There are Golf buyers out there who will love it, who will appreciate it. I applaud you on that. It looks fantastic. I wish it wasn't quite so expensive. I'll just leave it at that. I'll be the diplomatic guy.
You know, they're going to sell all 333. It's not like this is a super mass produced vehicle. They're going to find 333 people who want to buy these, whether buying it as an investment, whether they're going to buy it and enjoy it and put it on the road for whatever reason. 333 is such a small production run.
Yep.
That number of buyers certainly exists.
Mm-hmm. And I love Group FBC points out to 80 grand. That's a new ZR2 Bison plus a base Golf. But if we all made these financial decisions just based on logic, life would be no fun.
Yeah, I confess I don't know that any of the cars we talked about so far are made for my budget.
Yeah,
same.
Well, you're talking to the guy with a 1/25th scale Chrysler Concord diecast car. Look at that sitting right there. That's where my mindset is these days.
Tim, I really appreciate you for joining us tonight. And now it is your time to shine because, like I said at the beginning of the show, you talked to Chris Benjamin, who is the head of design for Scout Motors. They are Volkswagen's Smith. You and I talked about Scout when they first announced them. Scout is going to have an SUV and a pickup. They're going to be an electric brand. And Volkswagen has kind of positioned them kind of sort of as its own deal. They get to design cars themselves. They get to build cars themselves. They're still under the Volkswagen umbrella, but, you know, they're kind of off getting to, you know, play around with some fun stuff. And Tim, please, it's your time to shine. Tell us a little bit about what you talked to Chris about, and I think we'll throw some questions at you as you go.
For sure.
Yeah, I definitely do. But I was lucky to speak with Chris Benjamin last week, actually, ahead of the news dropping on Tuesday of his appointment to Scout as their chief design officer. So, as you said, Scout is effectively a spinoff of Volkswagen. It's interesting. It feels a little bit of they feel a little bit more independent than the rest of the Volkswagen brands, at least right now. But we'll see how that comes together. There will be technology sharing between Scout and Volkswagen platforms, motors, drivetrains, that kind of thing. But the exact nature of that kind of remains to be seen. But for sure, Volkswagen really wants. It feels like Volkswagen really wants Scout to have its own identity, its own feel. And certainly Scout's got a strong American heritage that they want to bring into the table, which is, of course, really important here in the U.S., especially in the off-road scene. And so that's what Scout's really trying to capitalize on. And so Chris Benjamin, coming from Stellantis, really focusing on the interior design of a lot of the recent Jeeps, including the 2024 Wrangler. That's, you know, right in their wheelhouse. That's exactly the kind of experience that Scout really wants to bring to the table. And interestingly, a lot of what we talked about was tactility, and that's something that is lacking in a lot of EVs, especially, you know, if we talk about Volkswagen, the ID.4. When that first came out, one of the big complaints that I had, and a lot of other people as well, was the lack of tactility, you know, touch-sensitive buttons here and there. There were a distinct lack of things that you could actually touch and feel. Everything was touchscreen-based. Everything was capacitive touch. The steering wheel in particular, all the controls on there were just really hard to use because it was hard to tell, you know, what was volume up, what was cruise control, what was the D-pad for not toggling through the gauge cluster, that kind of thing. And Volkswagen has since addressed that for sure. But really, when you talk about off-road vehicles and vehicles that are really strong performing off-road, like the Bison we talked about earlier, there's generally a desire for strong tactility and kind of a chunky feel. And so we talked about that quite a bit. The changes that they made in the Wrangler, that Chris's team made in the Wrangler to make that a little bit stronger, and a little bit how that's going to apply going forward as he now brings his skills and a lot of experience to scout. Chris has got a really interesting portfolio, and his career was great, sure. Starting with Mercedes-Benz and then moving forward to Volvo. He did the V40, which is one of the best-looking Volvos of all time, sadly, a Volvo that we never got here in the U.S. But then from there, went on to Stellantis and did the Grand Wagoneer interior, which I think we can all agree is fantastic, too. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely a great sign for Scout interiors, but Chris will also be, of course, working on exterior design as well. And the other thing that he and I talked about a lot was respecting the heritage of Scouts, but also not being trapped in the past. We've seen Ford bringing back the Bronco and doing a great job of creating a look and feel that honors the past, but also feels fresh. And so I'm really curious to see what Chris and team can do for the Scouts products before. You know, the Scout 2, I think, came out in 72. And then they had the Terra truck and a few other products that ultimately all ended in 1980 when Scout folded. So they've got 40 years of time to kind of make up and to bring that brand 40 years into the future. And I'm really excited to see what those look like and ultimately how they drive.
Well, let me just ask you. Curious. We're both curious. Why don't you go first, good sir?
Okay, so I was curious, and you touched on this just a little bit with what you were mm-hmm. saying, so I hope you can kind of go into some more detail.
Sure.
So what we've seen of Scout so far, you know, basically we've only seen kind of shadowy drawings and profiles and stuff like that, is that it is definitely taking on the retro modern type of look. Like, there is a distinct similarity to the earlier Scout vehicles and, you know, the International Harbor Scout, you know, those vehicles, but it also still looks modern. And I was curious, did you get to talk to Chris at all about how you balance that? Because I own a 2006 Mini Cooper, you know, mm-hmm. which is amongst that kind of generation. You had the New Beetle, the Mini, the Ford Thunderbird. You know, there were a ton of vehicles at that time. The HHR? Is that? No. Anyway, the Chevy that,
yeah, I think it was HHR, yep.
Yep. That tried to kind of do that retro look in a modern way. And some of them succeeded and some of them failed. And mm-hmm. It's a very, to me, it's a tightrope you have to walk. Like, you can't go too far into the past and you can't change things too much either. Did you get to talk to him about any of that and how he intends to balance those things?
Yeah, we spoke quite a bit about that, and that's really, again, getting back to the idea of Scouts, you know, going dormant for 40 years, and so them having to make up for 40 years of time. They've actually done a number of feedback groups with Scout owners. There's a huge community of really dedicated Scout owners, particularly on the West Coast, and so they've done kind of design feedback and study feedback with some of those hardcore users. And Chris said that the feedback that they get, by and large, when they ask those those classic Scout owners, what do they want to see? They basically said they want a truck that looks exactly like their truck from 1972. But ultimately, Chris said that that's not really what he wants to bring to market. He wants to honor that design, but bring it forward. In terms of, you know, giving me any sneak peeks or details, you know, I think we can expect that the headlight shape, that kind of iconic round headlights, to make some kind of an indication there. But beyond that, it's a little hard to say. The one thing that he did say was that Scouts kind of have a heritage of open air motoring, much like the Wrangler does. And so that's something that he said that they want to bring to the table. But interestingly, he said he wants to bring the experience of open air motoring to their vehicles without some of the pitfalls, I think he said, that other manufacturers have seen. And he kind of was indirectly referencing some of the issues that Ford has had with their hard tops, and certainly, you know, the Wrangler tops have traditionally not been that easy to operate. So I think we'll see some interesting innovations on the front there. I'm curious if we'll even see something like a folding windscreen, because that's something that some Scouts had. That might be maybe being a little bit too optimistic, especially for a vehicle of that weight, that you'll need to provide a good amount of rollover protection, that kind of thing. But certainly, he said open air motoring. And so he wants to kind of honor the in addition to honoring that classic design, he wants to honor kind of the classic expectations, the classic use cases that people had back then, and the kind of fun things that people would do with their scouts, as much as the kind of the fun and funky styling of those things too. So I'm curious to see how that all comes together. But no, he unfortunately would not slip me in any sketches or sneak peeks or anything like that. We still got to wait a little bit longer for that.
Well, that's one thing that I was actually going to ask you about that you kind of touched on there a little bit. You mentioned in your article where he was talking about a design that was less fundamentally compromised, and I love that passage, than Bronco or Jeep. And yeah, it definitely felt like he was giving a little poke to the roof issues that Ford was having with the Bronco. Did you get a sense that it went beyond that, a reference maybe to some of the reports of the Wranglers with the death wobble, you know, with the solid axle up front on that?
Yeah. We talked quite a bit about his design influences and his time at brands like Mercedes-Benz and Volvo. And so he's really bringing an interestingly international perspective to the table here. Obviously, this is an American brand, and Scour really wants to lean on that heritage. But he said he wants these cars to drive as well as a European car, and he wants them to be as reliable as a Japanese car. And that's kind of playing into, you know, automotive cliches to some degree. I think that, you know, American cars drive as well as European cars these days. But ultimately, you know, if you think about that heritage, that points to something that is going to be a significantly different driving experience than your average Wrangler. You know, you hop in a Wrangler, you drive to the store, it feels like you're driving a Wrangler. The Bronco is definitely a step forward in that regard. But even so, if you drive, you know, a Bronco versus a Bronco Sport, you can tell that one is a very different experience than the other. So, you know, Chris made no bones about the fact that this is going to be an incredibly comprehensive, well-performing off-road vehicle, and I have no doubt about that. But if you drive, for example, a Rivian R1T or an R1S, those are vehicles that drive really nicely. They have great on-road manners. They may be a little bit sloppy and floaty, but then again, they're really large Chevy EVs, and they're very comfortable to drive in, but yet you take those things off-road, and they're absolute monsters. And I think that that's something that Scout is looking to bring to the table for these things. Things that can be comfortable, legitimately comfortable on-road vehicles, things that you can take your kids to school with and not have them, you know, bouncing out of the back seats or deaf from the wind whistling around the soft top, that kind of thing. But then hit the trails on the weekend and keep up with absolutely anything out there. I think that's the idea. And that's something that, again, outside of something that's on the really high-end premium side like a Rivian, we haven't really seen that before. And, you know, Scout's promising to have something in the $40,000 range. So something that is legitimately attainable, to have something that will be that high performing, but also be something that's comfortable and livable, and something that's also high tech at an attainable price point. I'm really excited to see how that comes together. We're still a couple of years away, so I wouldn't be surprised if that price creeps up a little bit, but I'm definitely bullish and I'm excited about it.
And let me just give a quick shout out to everybody listening. Of course, you can join us live in the conversation, Motor One.com on Facebook, Motor One on YouTube, Motor One.com on Twitter. You're catching us on audio, Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, Deezer. And the article that we're referencing, Tim wrote this article. You can go over to MotorOne.com. Scout's new head of design brings Jeep background to brand reboot. A little bit of a tongue twister there. Nice headline. I appreciate that. You can go check that out over at MotorOne.com. So much information here. A little bit more on the design, because I found your intro to this article very interesting, and it kind of ties in to the Colorado ZR2 Bison a little bit, where there's this trend of just bigger, beefier, more wild, more rugged, more off-road. And I think you describe here, if this trend continues, eventually we're all just going to look like we're in a Mad Max dystopian society where all of these wild styles come in. But the impression I got from your interview is that Chris doesn't really want to go in that direction. He wants to, he's not looking at this big kind of burly. I mean, traditionally Scout was very much a competitor to the older Jeep and the Bronco back in the day.
Yep.
In theory, to be that way now, you're going to have to go a little bit more rugged, but it sounds like they want to take it maybe a little in the direction of Land Rover, maybe?
I think it's a question of capability versus aesthetic and attitude, if anything. And it's really, I think the attitude is what Chris wants to change. And I think that's something that Scott Keogh wants to change as well, the CEO of Scout Motors. They want these to be approachable cars. They don't want to be, you know, mean. And I think that's what that's the aesthetic that a lot of off-roaders go for, a mean car, you know, an imposing car, something that is, you know, that that owners at least think is an intimidating thing, whether it be angry eyes on Wranglers or you know, big red slashes and graphics on your Raptor R, that kind of thing. That's really not what they're going for. They want, as far as I can tell, Scouts will be as capable as all those products, maybe not as fast, but you know, that capable in terms of off-roading, but they don't want them to be kind of off-putting or there's this whole idea of what is a Scout. That's something that I get to speak with Scott Keogh a few months ago. And he said that it's really important to the brand is the idea of being a Scout. And that is kind of being, he described it as basically being a good representative of the culture, of pushing forward the idea of being helpful, of exploring, of getting out there, of enjoying nature, but not like tearing through nature, not dominating things, not, you know, planting your flag and claiming a space or intimidating anybody else, but being kind of good stewards to the world as you are getting out there and exploring, which is a very different attitude than we see when we see a lot of, you know, that Hennessy Raptors and that kind of thing, just jumping off of dunes and making a big mess and that kind of thing. And don't get me wrong, I respect and appreciate the performance of those vehicles for sure, but it's really, if nothing else, it's the attitude that I think Chris wants to change, the idea of being good stewards and having a vehicle that is approachable, but still incredibly capable.
You mean, so in other words, no 6x6 Scouts, probably?
I mean, we'll see what Hennessy's up to. They do some fun things.
So I was curious. So we know Scout is going to do a pickup truck and an SUV as their first two products. They've been very, very clear about that. Were you able to get any sort of idea about how they're going to differentiate the design between those two? And I can, for anyone watching on YouTube, for anyone watching the video version of this, I can show you exactly what I mean. And that is that some Scouts, if you look at them, they have this SUV body with this upward kink, and it keeps it from looking like it's a pickup truck with just a bed on, you know, with a bed capper on the back. You can see it here versus other models. They have this very boxy appearance. And I was just wondering, did you get any idea how they intend to differentiate the look of those two models?
No, really, I think too early to talk too much detail about that kind of thing, unfortunately. So no, I wasn't able to get anything like that. But I know that the truck will be larger, much like the Rivian truck is larger than their SUV. So I think that will obviously be something, a visual differentiator. But no, yeah, as you mentioned, I think it's the Terra, I think, was their the former SUV, and that definitely has a different vibe to it than the Scout 2 of the time. And I do hope that they can kind of bring a different kind of attitude to the two products to differentiate them more than just a little bit of length and obviously an open bed. But no, I don't know. I don't know exactly what else they're going to do to differentiate the two. I know the truck will also be a little bit pricier, which will be another differentiator, but visually, I'm not sure.
Okay. I don't think I'd heard that before. Okay, cool.
Well, I mean, Groove FBC says it all here. There is so much potential here for stripe packages. I think Scout would be a huge swing and a miss if they don't at least offer some of these retro stripe packages.
It would
fit in. I mean, no big like R's with slashes through them, but just, I mean, I think some of these classic packages, like the red with just the white striping that goes along the side, kind of breaks down. I mean, that would translate to a nice modern, I think, SUV shape.
Like we're seeing in some of these photos, a two-tone look with a, you know, a white roof with a different colored body, that, you know, even that is it's vaguely retro, but, you know, you still see vehicles doing it today, and it's a neat look.
Yeah, this orange and white package in particular, I think, is gorgeous, and I do hope that they can tap into that to some degree, because there are so many boring color combinations out there on a lot of cars right now, and it'd be lovely to see some of this. I think Ford's doing a great job with the Bronco too, of bringing some of this taste back, and I think this is such a strong heritage. But as you look through these cars, I mean, none of these cars look intimidating anyway. They all look kind of friendly. They all look like people who are out there having a good time, and that's really, from what I've gotten the sense or the vibe of the current Scout culture as well, a lot of them, again, are West Coast, California, live in kind of fun things to take down to the beach with a surfboard on top, that kind of thing. Which, again, is a very different attitude than your average, or from what I see around here anyway, your average Wrangler owner with the angry eyes on the front to go with, you know, mud up the sides and skull and crossbones, that kind of thing. So I think that that's going to be a big differentiation for them. I do hope that they have some cool 70s graphics package, because that's definitely a missed opportunity. I totally agree there.
By the way, yeah. For anyone watching, I love these two, this dark green and gold, and then this pickup truck. Like, these two are my favorites of this gallery that we have, just personally.
The red with the white stripe. That's just begging.
Oh, this one.
Yeah, that right there. That's just begging to be brought back. And I mean, you could almost make that just a two-tone finish, right? Sure. And I think that right there sets it apart from Wrangler and Bronco. I mean, you have Bronco, you have their retro package where you're getting the red letter. That's pretty neat. But that is such an identifiable portion of Scout history. That with the little up kink to the window at the back. Yeah, it's refreshing to hear that they're thinking not in terms of bigger, burlier, meaner, as you've been saying, Tim.
Yeah.
But something that's still completely capable of taking you off road wherever you want to go, but you just don't have to be all shouty about it. I guess that's probably maybe the best way to describe it.
Yeah. And what's more intimidating than somebody who's better than you at something, but who does it with a big smile on their face? I mean, that's I think exactly what they want to be.
And you were mentioning, so Chris Benjamin, obviously he kind of started out with interior design and then, you know, has gone elsewhere. It really makes me hope that, and you said he was talking about functionality and usability. It makes me hope that there are, you know, big chunky buttons and switches and stuff like that. Like, hey, I have got a car with a touchscreen. Touchscreen has its place. But sometimes buttons are the right thing too. It just depends on the application and where you put them. But yeah.
Yeah, he specifically called out HVAC controls. There'll be dedicated buttons and knobs for those. Volume knob, he explicitly said there will be one of those two. And he actually, you know, we talked a bit about the work on the Wrangler, and he called out the shifter for, you know, for high, for low, that kind of thing. And he talked about the tactility and the chunkiness of that shifter and how much attention that got when they were putting that together. And then, you know, transition from there to talk about some of the physical controls that they'll have in the Scout. Now, presumably there won't be, you know, a four high, four low shifter in the Scout, because it's all going to be mostly powertrain, so they won't have to worry about exactly. That. But he mentioned that as kind of something that was important to the kind of the ethos or the feel of the Wrangler and wanting to bring that kind of similar sort of tactility, that kind of precision to the Scout motors as well. So yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting blend of that kind of not exactly old school, but classic tactility. But yet, you know, I did corner him and ask him explicitly, will there be Android Auto? Will there be Apple CarPlay? And he said, yes, there will be both. There will be touchscreen with all the modern conveniences that you come to expect.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like every automaker at this point, they're taking a little moment to maybe jab at GM a little bit for their big announcement. So we're going to phase it. It seems like every time I turn around, I get a comment from somebody somewhere saying, oh no, we're still going to have Apple CarPlay and Android Auto in our vehicles going forward. These are what people want. Why would we want to take that away from them? And hearing the tactile controls, I think there's more. I think automakers are seeing more pushback now from buyers in terms of just burying so many things that should be very, very simple, two or three screens deep into a touchscreen, where just a simple button or a switch can make the difference. I understand the aesthetics of a nice clean sheet of paper, if you will, for an interior. There's something pleasing about that, but a few logically placed controls neatly arranged, that looks pleasing too.
It's like automakers, or to me, it seems like designers thought everyone lives in this ideal world where it's 70 degrees all the time, but for a large portion of the population, hey, it gets cold in the winter and I gotta wear gloves. Yeah. And your touchscreen does not work when I'm wearing gloves, so you know
that's true. Well, I blame Iron Man for all of that. Okay. I mean, Iron Man goes up to his table, right? That like you get in the first movie there, and it's just like his holographic table, everything's nice and clean and neat, and boop boop boop, and you just start doing all his holographics. Yeah, I blame Iron Man. Yeah,
deal.
He saved the universe from Thanos. I don't care. I don't care. And Group FBC, another good point. Ford reversed their decision to remove AM radio. I see GM reversing their non-CarPlay decision to. I wish I were
so optimistic.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, when you start talking about like designs and future tech, the things that they're mentioning now, those were in the works at least a year or two ago, if not much further.
Mm-hmm.
If they do reverse course, it probably won't be right away. But you never know. There's certainly been a lot of negative feedback from people on that. But maybe GM's system will come out and work better as they're advertising. We'll have to wait and see on that.
Yeah. So, Tim, we're kind of sort of finishing up, but I am actually really curious. Where do you fall in the Android Auto, Apple CarPlay, yes, no, GM kind of debate?
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely pro mobile interface. I'm an Android guy myself, so I'm Android Auto, but certainly Apple CarPlay offers much the same experience. So yeah, I think that's a really important thing. Manufacturers had every opportunity to develop amazing in-car infotainment systems, and by and large, they screwed up. They failed to do so. And so they gave up that early mover advantage. They gave up that opportunity to provide that kind of functionality to their users. And at this point, they've missed the boat. I think for them to try to capture that or recapture that again, it would be really incredibly difficult. So for Chevrolet to provide that same degree of functionality, to provide the same amount of insight into your life that your phone already has to replicate that, to me seems absolutely impossible. So I'm not optimistic that experience that's going to be brought forth is going to be in any way comparable or as user satisfying as either Android Auto or Apple CarPlay. So yeah, that's my thoughts on the subject.
And I can't remember the report specifically that I saw. I'm trying to remember the automaker that it came from, but it was a case of these other tech companies, they're already handling these solutions that we don't need to focus on as automakers anymore. We can focus on just working with their systems. It's easier on that end. It's what the consumer wants. We can focus then on other aspects of connectivity, of technology. So it was certainly a strange decision when GM came out and said, we're going to phase this out. And I mean, it's important to remember, they said it'll be phased out in stages. I can't remember offhand which vehicles it'll be absent on at first.
It'll EVs, start with their EVs.
Yeah. EVs mm-hmm. primarily. So maybe there's a little bit of a buffer zone there. Well, we'll just have to see what the future holds, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Tim, can I ask you one last question here? This, because I mean, you had a great interview.
Thank you.
And great insight here into Scout Motors. And it's certainly on the minds of a lot of people, especially the off-road community. I knew a guy in high school that drove around in an old International Scout, just a lot of character, a lot of love.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything about this interview that surprised you, that maybe you didn't expect to hear or learn or just something surprising in the whole process of talking with Chris on this?
I think that core idea of being an approachable, kind of almost friendly SUV, I think that was an interesting revelation to me, for sure, that's really a conscious decision that they're making, that they want to bring that forward in the design of the vehicle. So yeah, that I think that was probably the most surprising thing that came out of it for me.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, and it's an astute point too. If you want to be different than everybody else, the trend is certainly bigger, better, meaner, more aggressive. If you want to stand out, go the opposite direction.
Yeah. When's the last time you saw a new truck launch that was smaller and more friendly than the one that came before it? And it's been a while.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about mid-sized trucks today that were full-size trucks, what, 15, 20 years ago?
Not that long ago.
Less than that. 10.
Yeah. for sure.
So again, we're finishing up here, but Tim, you said you stopped, you talked to Scott Keough previously about Scout, and what kind of impressions did you get from him from the brand? Because obviously, Chris, he's designing the cars, but Scott Keough, he's running the brand. Did they kind of, did you get a similar feel that they're kind of seeing eye to eye in terms of where the, what they want to do with this revived brand?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yes. Scott definitely has that same idea of again, defining what a Scout is and what that means, what that's going to mean to the markets. And they have this, you know, on one hand, a great opportunity, but also a pretty big challenge of yeah, bringing this iconic brand back to market, but also bringing a brand that has been dormant for 40 years and that a lot of people have never heard of. I asked a couple of friends of mine over the past couple of days since I did this interview if they'd ever heard of Scout, and nobody actually had even heard of Scout. Wow. Certainly nobody had heard of this reboot. I think those of us in the automotive community are aware of them. But outside of that, it's kind of green field. So they have this really interesting opportunity to kind of tie into the old marketing and the old, you know, some of these great images that we're seeing now, to kind of help to build what this brand ethos needs to be. But they have this great opportunity to really do their own thing with it, which I think from what I could tell, Chris is very excited about that. Scott's very excited about that. And yeah, they're definitely in the same vision again, that idea of creating an approachable car company, an incredibly capable cars, but also attainable cars, much more so than we see from Rivian. And hopefully, you know, cars that can draw on all the engineering expertise that comes from the broader Volkswagen group. So cars that'll be, you know, reliable and everything else that we want them to be too. So yeah, I definitely think that they're in lockstep there. And Scott's got some great vision for the company, I think, as well. The way that he's building the company, the people he's hiring, the way that he's hiring them. From what I've seen, everything seems to be pointing in the right direction.
Well, I mean, anything that gets us more 70s style press photos. I mean, era, that's like, it's like a golden age of press photos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never mind the amount of orange vehicles with yellow striping or vice versa. Mm-hmm. Just Bruce and I keep threatening to do an episode where we're just talking about 70s.
We're going to do that photos someday, man.
It doesn't really work for Spotify, though. It doesn't really work for our audience.
It doesn't, but the fact that we are a live show now, we could do it now that we are a live show, because we have people commenting, and they could comment with us, and they could even throw their own out and stuff like
maybe,
that.
I think
the time is getting closer for the all weird 70s press photo.
I was gonna say, maybe we do Rambling About Cars, that 70s show edition, where it's a special edition in addition to our weekly podcast. I show up wearing a big curly wig, or maybe I just get out of the blow dryer and go for it. I don't know. And we go over 70s photos. Tim, would you join us for that?
Sounds like a good time.
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to be our show for tonight. And with that, Tim, I want you to go ahead and promote anything Open that mic. You want to promote, whether it's social media, whether it's work you've done, whether it's something you find cool. Just promote.
And tell us what you got coming up, too.
Great. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I definitely hope that folks who are listening will go check out this article. I'm really happy with how it came together, and I think there is some really good insight into what's coming from Scout. But yeah, if you want to hear more from me, you can follow my Substack. It's timstevens.substack.com. I'm Tim_Stevens if y'all are still hanging on Twitter, or you can find me. I'm at Tim Stevens at most other platforms, Instagram and Blue Sky and Mastodon and pick your social media flavor of the week. But otherwise, I'm actually going off to Le Mans here next weekend. So there'll be some coverage from Le Mans coming from various sites on an internet near you coming soon.
Very cool.
Very good. Cool. Sounds like a fun trip. I hope it
should be
I hope it goes amazingly well. See, what happens?
So, have you been to Le Mans before?
I have, yeah. I went with Nissan in 2016 or 17, whenever they had that fateful year with the basically front-wheel drive prototype that didn't go so well.
So bad year where didn't that car do two laps?
No, it did. Did a few more than that, but that was an interesting year for sure. I'm going with Porsche this year, so they've obviously got some pretty high expectations, and I'm definitely curious to see how that goes.
Okay.
For sure. Well, thanks so much, Tim, for being here. Thanks, everybody out there, for listening. Just one last reminder, Motor1.com on Facebook, Motor1.com Twitter, Motor1 on YouTube. That's where you can catch us live every Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And then our audio goes up every Friday at 10 a.m. approximately. Sometimes we're a little earlier, but usually around 10 a.m. Spotify, iHeartRadio, Deezer, Amazon, Apple, and like a dozen others that that we can't even remember the names of. So many ways to get rambling about cars.
Absolutely. And for everyone out there, good afternoon, good evening, good night, and good morning to Groupa FBC out there in Australia. We love all of our listeners. We love the fact that you decided to spend time with us to, you know, of the myriad of ways that you could be listening to different shows, playing different things, whatever, that you decided to choose us. We appreciate that and we love that. But yeah, that will be the show for this week. And it's been a lot of fun. And so bye-bye, everybody.
We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.